The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So again, my name, is that still going? Yeah, my name is May Elliott, and it's great to be back with you guys for our third week, Mindfulness of Emotions. So as with each week, we'll do a very brief review at the beginning here of what we talked about last week. As a refresher. So mindfulness, knowing what we're experiencing in the present moment and knowing in a really simple way, right? That's mindfulness. And last week we did mindfulness of body. So why is it useful to be mindful of the body? Any thoughts on that? What's beneficial about that? Yeah. Oh, let's use the mic. Sri, would you mind grabbing the mic here and just for the recording?
I turned it on. So.
Oh, thank you. It's to be in the body so that we are not in the mind and thinking and racing thoughts and all that. So.
Yeah, right. To be in the body. The body's a lot more simple than the mind. And the mind generates a lot of extra dukkha, extra suffering for us. Being in the body. Simple.
Yeah, I don't know. My experience with pain has been such that, like, I can resist it generally, but when I start paying attention to it, I can both accept it, but I can also, like, more clearly react to it. And if I need to change how I'm being, walking or what have you.
Mm-hmm. And when you say react, you mean kind of like you can...
I can understand what's happening in my body physically.
And maybe what's needed.
Yeah.
Nice. Great. I think that's one of the benefits, really, of being able to be present for what's happening. Often the knee-jerk response to pain is just resistance or hatred or, you know, wishing it was otherwise. But when we can be mindful of it, other options come online. It's like, oh, maybe I can allow this. Maybe I can accept this, that this is here. And what's the compassionate response? Oh, I need to shift my posture, or I need some water, or I need a blanket, or whatever it is. That's great. Thanks, Doug. So yeah, many benefits. Oh, Emily, do you have one? Please.
Oh, just to, please. I think it helps to remember that, like, you're this thing that's existing and you're not just like you. Sometimes you're just in so much, you can be in so much tunnel vision that you forget that you're like actually something that's occupying space.
Yeah.
And has needs. And, you know, like the breathing thing, that's still happening, even if you're doing something else, is kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. So I think it's one of the benefits of being mindful of your body.
Yeah, we can get in so that tunnel vision. We can be so lost in our story of what's happening in the past or what we're going to do in the future that we don't even realize there's a being here that's moving through space and speaking and doing and thinking, and there's just no awareness of that. And it's really hard to have any agency or choice in our life when we don't know that, then when we're not actually here. It's really hard to be present for our life if we're always lost in our stories. That's great. Thank you. Anything else? Yeah, please. You're just delivering.
Yeah. I was thinking maybe there's a link between the last class and this class, because I think sometimes the bodily sensations can be a clue as to the emotions.
Yes. Thank you for your foreshadowing. and we can say the flip as well, that one of the most powerful ways of practicing with emotions is feeling them in the body. So that's why we do mindfulness of body first. Because emotions, and I'll speak at length about this, but a whole new way of being with emotions becomes possible when we can feel them in the body, to really identify where they live in the body. Each emotion has its own physical signature that we'll talk about. So, yeah, one more.
I mean, I think it's interesting that a lot of the responses to how you were doing were actually emotions. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. like not like, oh, my toe hurts, but like it was like, I'm feeling happy or good or yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, to people's credit, that's a more normal question to ask. How are you? Than what's a sensation in your body? It's kind of weird to ask that. So it's understandable that people kind of tipped a bit towards how am I? Mm-hmm. But yeah, just overlap there between emotion and body sensation for sure. Great. So yeah, last time we talked about that the body speaks the language of sensations, right? That the experience of the body, we know it through sensations like tingling or pressure, expansion, contraction, heat, cold, piercing, pricking, fluid, you know, all of these different descriptors we can experience in our body. We talked about how to practice with the body, as one option being breath as the home base, as the anchor. And then as other sensations or aspects of the bodily experience become predominant, to let go of the anchor and explore that new sensation till it's no longer predominant, come back to the breath. Notice a new one, check it out, come back to the breath, and kind of hop around that way. And also include sounds in that. There's a sound outside, hear the sound for a while, come back to the breath. And we'll add to that today. We'll follow that same style, and we'll add moods and emotions to that. And then lastly, we talked about pain, how to work with pain. We can go into the pain, kind of drop below our label of pain and explore the kaleidoscope of sensations. We can go away from the pain to give ourselves to resource, you know, maybe hang out in the soundscape, maybe open the eyes, give ourselves a break from the pain, or we can change our posture. So lots of options there. Do we have any questions about kind of what's happened for you since last week? Anything in your practice that you're wondering about? Anything that would be useful to touch on before we get started? Doug, just come grab the mic. And it'd be helpful if I don't say your name, please do say your name when you grab the mic.
So one of the suggested exercises from last week was having a mindful meal, mm-hmm. Which makes me wonder something I've wondered before, like what counts as meditation or mindfulness as a practice, mm-hmm. You know, like if I've had that mindful meal that day, does that, I mean, this maybe is like a personal question for everyone, but does that count for me as that meditation mm-hmm. that day? Or can it be one of the options that I'm picking from in practice?
Yeah. So the way that I like to think of it is that when I do my seated practice, I call that formal practice. That's often referred to as formal practice, to do a seated meditation practice. But ideally, we're learning how to bring mindfulness into all activities. So the Buddha talked about eating mindfully, going to the bathroom mindfully, every motion, every time you extend your arm, being mindful of it, every time you speak, being mindful of it. So particularly on meditation retreats, if you go sit a week-long meditation retreat, the idea is that in all actions every day, you're practicing mindfulness. I think, if you're bringing that mindful attention to what you're doing, you're growing your capacity for being awake. You are growing that muscle. So that's supports your practice. It's part of your practice. You can count that as part of your practice. And I usually suggest that if people are doing daily life practice, like eating a meal or mindful walking, that they don't have that replace their formal practice. So do both. Yeah.
Sorry, I missed the series. I thought this was like an independent, but so my question is about, you know, when I'm depressed, I don't want to be in the present moment. Mm-hmm. So it's not pain per se in the body. I don't know how to do meditation.
Yeah, it's a form of emotional pain. Depression,
yeah,
there's a lot of emotions that are extremely painful, and we don't really want to have to be with them in the present. And so part of what we're learning to do by being in the body, being with the breath, being with the body, kind of growing this capacity to be here and now, when the present isn't quite so hard, right? It's like, okay, this is more of a neutral moment right now. I'm growing this capacity for mindfulness, just here now. And then eventually I'm going to learn how to expand my bandwidth for being with more and more difficult states. It might be too hard to be present with depression right now, but when we start with things that are a little easier, it's like going to the gym and starting with the 5-pound weights rather than the 100-pound weights. But what we can learn through growing this capacity is that we actually can be present with the full spectrum of human emotion, that there's nothing that can unmoor us or discourage us, that we can really be present and mindful with all of it without adding any extra layer of reactivity. And so, and I'll elaborate, I'll give you a tool today for working with difficult states. And also know it's totally fine that you weren't at the first two. If you're interested later, they're recorded and you can listen to them. Yeah, so I put the little homework strip on the front table again with that link to the recordings if people want it. Is there another one? Yeah, please.
Daniel, my question, this past week I felt very fused to my thoughts, and biggest question I had during meditation was, am I doing this right? And like, I was wondering, like, are there signifiers you would say that you're doing it right? And what are like small things you can do as like etiquette to do it better?
Yeah. So something that grows over time is just our faith and confidence in our capacity that, okay, this is like, I'm doing this right. One thing you can drop in if you're like, am I doing this right? You might just drop in the question, am I aware? So you can all try that right now. Am I aware? Yeah, there's awareness here. I know that I'm sitting. Or you might ask, if that feels too amorphous for you, some people might be like, am I aware? That, you know, that feels complicated. But if that doesn't work for you, you might try, do I know that I'm breathing when I breathe? Like, do I know an in-breath as an in-breath and an out-breath as an out-breath? So if there's that sense of knowing there, if you can sense it in your body and you're aware that it's happening, that's it. Very simple. Mm-hmm. Maybe last one.
Saurabh, something similar. So when I start meditation, I can feel my breath. I can feel all the things happening in my body. But everything slows down after a while. And it feels like I can even stop breathing it because the breathing is very slow. So I don't know if I'm going to sleep or I'm still meditating. I even got a sensation like I'm like a rock just sitting there, like very slow breath. I don't know if that's like how it should feel. Yeah.
So that's one thing that can happen in meditation is that as we settle, often the breath can get more subtle. It can get slower. Sometimes there can be a sense of being so settled we're mountain-like or rock-like. These are all normal experiences within the kind of framework of what can happen with the mind and the body in meditation. And know for everyone else, if you don't experience that, it doesn't mean you're doing it wrong. There's a variety of different ways that one can experience meditation, and that's not like the one correct evolution of the practice, say. But that is one thing that can happen. So you're on track, and as long as you're You might just connect with that same sense of like, oh, is, you know, am I aware? If you have that doubt of like, am I even meditating right now? Like, what's happening? Maybe you're, if you're getting kind of spaced out or sleepy, you might just check in, you know, am I aware? Do I still know my breath? Can I still sense my breath? Am I feeling my breath in my body? Yeah, great. And these are really great questions, I think, especially as you start a practice, you know, wondering like, am I doing it right? Is this it? And like, what's going on here? Please feel free to keep asking those, especially if you're like, this is happening, or my mind does this, is this, am I on track? Yeah, these questions are welcome, and it can be helpful to just be able to have them clarified. So let's dive into some of the teachings for today. As I mentioned, we're practicing with mindfulness of emotions. So this includes moods, it includes states of mind, and emotions and thoughts are closely related. There's a close relationship. And in the Buddha's time, there wasn't even such a clear distinction. Emotions and thoughts were both part of what was called citta, C-I-T-T-A. And citta is a Pali word. Pali is the language that the Buddha's teachings were originally recorded in. Citta means mind heart. I think I might have mentioned that the first day, mind heart. So it refers to this field of mental states, which include thoughts and emotions. Today, we're going to zoom in on the emotions piece, though. And then next week, we'll focus on thoughts. There's some particular practices that can be useful for each. And of course, this is the realm of emotions, moods, mind states. This is a really wide field. A lot falls under this, you know, from the most piercing sweet joy to, you know, the most tragic sorrow. You know, this all falls under this spectrum. And if we can learn how to practice skillfully with it, a lot of freedom is possible. There can be so much freedom in our lives if we can have a skillful relationship to our emotions. And one of our primary tasks as practitioners is to let emotions move through us. Often when we experience difficult emotions, we resist them or push them away or try to get rid of them. If we experience pleasant emotions, we try to keep them or hold on to them, to try to recreate them. And so what we're learning to do is neither push them away or grasp them, but rather allow the emotions to move through us. So we're not repressing or rejecting. We're also not acting out on every emotion. You know, if we're angry and the anger says you should punch somebody, we're not doing that, right? So there's a balance between repression and acting out, of course, and that's what we're learning. And part of this capacity to allow emotions to move through us rather than getting hung up on them is understanding that they're impermanent, that all emotions come and go. And of course, on a cognitive level, we know this, but when we actually are in that moment of grief or distress, there can be this sense of like, I got to do something about this, because there's this sense of like, it's going to be like this forever. And through this practice, we get to start seeing the moments that emotions end. It's really fascinating to see an emotion come to an end. And this is happening all the time, right? Throughout the course of a day, our mood can shift a million times. Maybe a million is an exaggeration, but many times through a day. And when we can see the shift in the emotion, we realize, oh, I don't need to control this so much. I don't need to tamper with my emotions as much. You know, can I just rest back and allow them to move through? You know, let them move through just like a weather pattern. Don't need to take them so personally. Don't need to get so so involved. Just being mindful, just allowing them to move through. So when we do this, we see that often they have a shorter lifespan. They have a shorter lifespan than we typically think they do. So I'd like to offer you a practice for work, specifically for working with difficult emotions. Part of it can be used for pleasant emotions as well, but the full teaching is useful for challenging emotions. And this is a teaching from Tanya Weiser, who's a teacher here at IMC. She came up with it. It's an acronym, and the acronym is RAFT, R-A-F-T. So R stands for recognize, A for allow or accept, F for feel, and T, different teachers teach this one differently. I'm going to teach it as tender. And so that points to being compassionate with our emotional response. So recognize, allow, feel, and tenderness. So I'll unpack that really fully for you. We'll start with the first two, and then we'll do a little meditation exploring those first two. Then we'll talk about the second two and do a meditation exploring those two. So this first one, recognize. So this is that really, really simple ability to go, oh, happiness, or oh, this is anger, or ah, grief. Resentment. Oh, this is contentment. So often when we're experiencing an emotion, we do not know we're experiencing that emotion. We are completely hijacked by it. It's kind of like a fish in the water that doesn't know it's in the water. So we're kind of like that, like often we don't know, like we might be just obsessively thinking about that frustrating conversation with our boss and what we should have said and what they said. And we don't even realize, oh, I'm angry right now. So this first step, it's just simple recognition of what emotion or mood is present. Often we don't know what's operating. So the more quickly we can recognize an emotion, the less likely it is that we're going to be hijacked by it and taken away by it without realizing it. The psychologist Dan Siegel coined the term name it to tame it. So there's a way where sometimes just to be able to put a name on something, there's something that can relax in us. To be able to name an emotion, it's like, oh, I'm just sad. Like that's all that's happening here. I'm just actually really sad about this situation. And then something else becomes possible. So sometimes that simple act of naming is really freeing. And this is where this noting practice that I've been talking about the past couple of weeks can be really helpful. So far I've shared it as like, noting an in-breath in, an exhale out. Noting tingling, pressure, heat. As we include emotions, it might be calm, or sadness. So we can start to note whatever we see on the emotional front as well. And for me, I've done a lot of this noting practice, such that when I'm doing that style of meditation, the mind just automatically provides notes. So it's not like I'm even doing it. It's almost like breathing. It just naturally provides notes. And sometimes it reveals for me an emotion that I didn't even know was there. So when this practice matures, it can be really, really fascinating to see the capacity for the noting to reveal like, oh, I didn't realize that I was feeling a little resentment about that. Like maybe I'll be like, lost in thought for a moment and then a note will go, resentment. Oh, I didn't realize. It's like, oh, that's what's happening here. So the noting can really take on a life of its own in a helpful way if you pursue that practice. So that's recognize. Let's move on to the second piece, which is allow. So our typical response to difficult emotions is aversion, pushing away that not wanting, rejecting force, and we want to get rid of them. And so often in meditation, we go, oh, I'm going to use meditation to meditate myself out of this unpleasant emotion, right? I'm in a bad mood, so I'm going to try to meditate this away. So in our practice, and that's, you know, an understandable, that's a much better tool than, say, using heroin or, you know, doing something really extreme to get rid of your emotion. Like, you know, not a bad thing. And as maybe I could say a wiser approach wouldn't be to get rid of the emotion, but to meditate, to learn how to be with the emotion without anything extra, to be with the emotion without rejection, without grasping, to learn how to be with the full spectrum of human experience and be at ease with it. So we need to, like, if we want to be free, if we want to be free without suffering, we need to be able to be okay with whatever emotion comes through. So that's how equanimity grows, this capacity to be okay with whatever arises. So the Buddha has this teaching about it's often referred to as the second arrow, and it can be applied to our emotional experience. So the first arrow is whatever emotion comes to visit. So let's say it's anger. The second arrow is how we relate or how we react to that initial arrow, that first emotion. So let's say we feel anger, and then we're embarrassed that we're angry. So the first arrow is just what arises. And then the second arrow is that reactivity. And it's often in that reactivity that we make it worse. We make it worse for ourselves. And then, you know, we can shoot a third arrow and go, you know, well, I'm angry, and oh gosh, I'm so embarrassed that I'm angry, and why am I always embarrassed? Like, this is so stupid. I can't believe myself. So then that third arrow might be self-judgment. So we can continue to shoot ourselves with arrow after arrow with our layers of reactivity that pile up based on that initial emotion. So it can be a lot more simple than that. It's possible to just stay with the anger, just as it is, not adding anything extra, not adding on a layer of commentary or analysis or interpretation or judgment, just anger. Really, really simple. You don't have to figure out why you're angry. Don't have to figure out how to get rid of it. Just being with the anger. And when we can stop shooting all those extra arrows, that's when we get to see what a short life cycle emotions often have. All those extra arrows can kind of pin it in place. But when we don't do that, often that initial emotion can move through quite quickly because we're not telling stories about it. We're not trying to manipulate it. Just, you know, just has its own brief life cycle. One of my colleagues, Dawn Neal, she says, the first arrow is what life does to you. The second arrow is what you do to yourself. So this is where we have more agency, where we have more control of how we are in the world. But it takes training. We can't just press a button and stop shooting those second arrows. A lot of the practice is just learning to start to see all those extra layers of reactivity and see the way that the mind proliferates in that way. And over time, learning how to be with an emotion in a much more simple way. So I want to emphasize that allowing, it doesn't mean that we are acting on our emotion necessarily. Like, it's not like we're like, oh, I'm allowing anger, so now I'll punch somebody. We're allowing the emotion to be there, but it doesn't mean that we're allowing ourselves to necessarily act on it or be unskillful with it. We might choose to do something. Maybe we feel angry and we realize, like, oh, I need to have a conversation with my spouse about this. So you can have a skillful action that comes out of that, but we're not, it's not about unskillful reactivity. Part of this is, allowing these emotions just to move through us like tides. So allowing the emotion to be there. And one way to be with an emotion without being swept away by it, without shooting these second arrows, is to feel it in the body. So that's what we'll get to shortly. For now, we're going to do a little meditation with the recognize and the allow. So what we'll do is I mentioned what we did last time, breath as the anchor, breath as the home base, and then including physical sensations. And this time we'll add emotions and moods. So, and you might try the noting practice with this. So noting an in-breath in, exhale out, just that soft little background note in the mind, you know, just 95% of the attention on the felt sense of breathing. And then I'll give you some instructions for including sensations and emotions. So go ahead and find your meditation posture. Remember, if you're feeling sleepy during this, it's totally fine to stand up. That's just equally as useful to do standing practice. So finding a posture that's alert and relaxed. Maybe taking a few deep breaths. Allowing the breath to resume a normal rhythm. Feeling the breath where it's easy to sense it. Maybe trying a little of this noting practice. In on an inhale, out on an exhale. And including other sensations in the body. If another sensation elsewhere in the body becomes predominant or draws your attention, letting go of the breath and sensing that area of the body, or the sound, if a sound draws the attention, letting yourself hear the sound. And remembering that whenever a sensation fades or is no longer predominant, to slide right back to the breath. Remembering as you sense other areas of the body to try noting, pulsing, pulsing. Coolness, whatever you notice. In a moment now, we'll shift from just receiving sounds and sensations to notice if there are any moods or emotions present. So you might just check in. Is there a background mood present right now? A mood or a mind state? An attitude. Maybe uneasiness. Boredom. Calm. Agitated. In doing so, you're practicing recognition. It's okay if you don't have the perfect name for it, that's fine. Seeing if anything's there. Maybe a strong emotion, anger, joy. Or an attitude, I don't like this, or maybe wanting to make something happen. So just recognizing. And whatever you find, however subtle or strong, can you allow it to be there? So we're not adding anything to it. No second arrow. Not pushing it away. Not judging it. Just allowing. Maybe you're not sure what emotion is present or what mood is present. It may be that confusion is what's happening. So can you recognize confusion or uncertainty? Staying with this mood or emotion as long as it's predominant, and then coming back to the breath. Returning to the breath as the anchor. can be helpful from time to time in your practice to check in and see if there's an underlying emotion or underlying mood. Sometimes emotions can be really in your face and obvious. It's like, wow, I feel really upset right now. But sometimes they're operating in the background and we don't really notice they're there. So just checking in. What mood? Is there a background mood? Oh, yeah, I've been feeling uneasy all day. Just this sort of dis-ease in the background. So you can just drop that inquiry in while you practice, while you do your breath practice. And then if there's an emotion present, note it, recognize it, allow it to be there, and then you'll feel it in the body. And we didn't focus so much on feeling in the body in that meditation, but we'll do a little more of that in the next one. So I'm curious, what did you notice in this? Anything stand out to you? Or were there any questions that came up as you did this? Do you see the green light on it?
Okay, yeah. Usually I have lots of emotions, but I think because of it's the group practice, I'm like much calmer than when I try to meditate on my own. But I was able, I gave myself an A+ because there was like the door squeaking or something. And it was caused all kinds of excitement. I noticed all this excitement. It's like, ooh, what's that? And it's like, is that a bug? And then it's like, it's a door. And it's like, oh my gosh, is it going to slam? You know? So I became aware of the narrative and all the, and it was the thoughts were causing this sense of excitement in me as opposed to the calm that I had. And then when it stopped squeaking, I calmed down again.
So that's a great example of the way that the mind can be preoccupied about something, and you could have just been totally lost and wondering what was happening with the door, but you were actually able to see your relationship to it, to go, oh, there's actually excitement present in relationship to what's happening right now. So that's really beneficial. That's awesome that you're able to see that and see that change. Oh, it was calm. Now there's some excitement. Oh, now there's calm again. So thank you for that. Yeah.
And I wanted to just offer, I'd heard from, I won't go through all the credentials, but somebody on a podcast was saying how I think scientifically our emotions only last, I can't remember if it's 6 seconds or 9 seconds. Like chemically, they only last that long. So if they keep going, it's our thoughts keeping them going.
Yeah, often it's a particular storyline, a particular narrative in our thoughts that we replay, and that kind of re-injects the emotion. If you've ever had a situation that has made you angry, chances are you didn't just replay that event once in your mind. And chances are the more you thought about it, the angrier you got. So there's a really strong interplay there. Anything else you noticed or any other questions?
I'm Doug again. I feel like when I'm sitting and reflecting on emotion, I find it's very difficult to sense anything. You mentioned, you know, the first arrow is like the world happening to you. There's not much world happening to me relatively to like the rest of life. And so I don't know. It's feels, I mean, I think it's good to like practice kind of the attention, but I find it difficult to like recognize if I'm feeling something. So,
and when you say it's hard to recognize whether you're feeling something, do you mean hard to recognize whether there's an emotion present
right.
or not? Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So this is something that in Western culture we don't receive a lot of emotional education when we go through school from our parents. We don't often learn how to identify our emotions. And for a lot of people, it's actually really helpful. The internet abounds with these, but emotion lists. So if you look up, you know, an emotion list on the internet, chances are you'll get a list of 50 different descriptors. And sometimes it's just really helpful to put that on the fridge for a while, or the bathroom mirror, or put it by your meditation cushion. And when you're not sure, like, is there an emotion here? Maybe, you know, check the list to, you know, grow that vocabulary for understanding that inner experience. And sometimes for people that have a hard time sensing what's happening, often it's easiest to start with strong emotions. So just start notice when something's really predominant. I imagine you can tell when, like, something feels strong. So allow that to, when those happen, go really pay attention. What's it feel like to be, you know, really, really excited? What's it feel like in the body? So then you can start training the mind to see that.
Yeah, I feel like when I haven't been in live situations where that's happening, I have found it helpful to, like, think about a live situation that happened and try to essentially, like, try to trigger that feeling again.
Yeah.
And then look at it.
Yeah. Great. Great. And we'll actually do that in the next meditation. We'll do a little reflection to see if some emotion comes up. Typically in our meditation practice, we're not doing any dredging or looking for something. If there's no emotion present, oftentimes people, when they go, there's nothing happening right now, there is no emotion, lots of times it's calm. So just a lot of people just are not used to knowing what calm feels like. And so check to see is this calm? If the system goes, this isn't calm, then that's a good clue too. Yeah. Great, thank you.
This could be pathologic, I guess, but what if there are situations that I found myself in where I know what the emotion is and I, like, lean into it so much so, because even if that emotion is really negative and I'm like, okay, I know I'm angry, but, like, it feels really good to be angry. So cool. I'm aware. I'm angry. I know I shouldn't be angry. And I just, like, I'm angry. Mm-hmm. But that feels wrong too, because sometimes that anger can be destructive. So I don't know, like, is it like I'm just shooting a bunch of arrows at myself, or is it still just like that's second arrow, mm-hmm. and I'm just still being penetrated by that second arrow?
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up, because you're not alone. I think it's really common for people to feel an emotion that actually is not a pleasant emotion, and they feed it anyway. Like there's something, like, it's, there can be an unwholesome emotion, you know, an emotion that is conducive of suffering. So, like, anger, envy, resentment, you know, this field of what we'd call unwholesome emotions. And there can be a draw to feed them, to as you were saying, rather than let it go, to kind of, like, rev it up, or, you know, keep replaying that story. And so that's, it's a common habit of mind. Not everybody does it. A lot of people do. And so we would say, I talked about how often our response to difficult emotions is we push them away. What that is, it's grasping hold of. So there's these two really common forces of mind, which is, you know, not wanting and wanting. So in that habit of mind that's revving it up a bit, there's often some wanting in that, like a holding on, like, I want to kind of keep this and juice it a bit. So both not wanting, pushing away, and wanting, grasping hold, are forms of a second arrow. So that's, both of those have that, you know, shooting a second arrow. It's adding something extra rather than just being with the baseline emotion in the most simple way. So the first step to working with that is noticing it's happening, which is exactly what you're doing. So really observing it, seeing what's happening there, feeling it in the body. So you can use RAFT when that's happening. Okay, so let's move on to this next piece then, the F in the T. So recognize, allow. And then the F is feel. And then T, we're doing tenderness for T. So feeling. I had mentioned at the beginning that each emotion has a physical signature in us. And not that it feels exactly the same every time, but that often there are physical sensations that come along with our emotions. So for a lot of people, anger feels like constriction in the chest and the neck and heat in the face. Often there's a lot of heat with anger in the body. Depression can feel really heavy and sodden and energyless and low and drooping in the body. Joy can feel kind of like a like uplifting feeling in the heart, like in the chest, the center of the chest, and like almost like a brightness in the chest for some people. So there's we can feel emotions often in our core, in the stomach, in the chest, in the jaw, in the face, in the head. These are common areas that we can feel that physical signature for these emotions. Things we might explore, you know, is the emotion contracted or expanded in the body? Is it hot or cold? Is it tight or loose? Where is it in the body? You know, sadness, if you've ever been on the verge of tears, you might feel a ball rise in the throat, kind of a tightness in the throat. So that's exactly what we're interested in exploring. And part of the reason we're doing this, part of the reason might be like, you know, so what's the point? Why just be with the body? You know, why feel the emotion in the body? Remember that our thought world often creates these mental movies that complexify our experience, and they lead to unnecessary suffering for us. The body is always in the present, and it's much more simple than what the mind generates. So if we can learn how to be with the emotion in the body, we can be with the emotion without those second arrows that make it worse for us. We can be with it in a really simple way, let it pass through. A lot of the thinking mind, a lot of our thoughts, are trying to figure out ways that we don't have to feel our emotions. I can remember a time that I was sitting in a meditation retreat, and I over and over again replayed this story of what I was going to say to my boss in a particular conversation after the retreat. So it was a conversation I was anticipating, and I just really needed to figure out, how was I going to say this thing? And how was I going to communicate it? What words were right? Replay, replay, replay. Took a really long time to figure out that, there's something beneath these thoughts. I'm anxious. I'm just anxious. And so rather than feeling the emotion, the thinking mind was trying to find a solution such that I wouldn't have to be anxious anymore. Like I'm going to think my way out of the anxiety. Not that I even knew I was anxious, but that's how the thoughts were functioning. So when I was able to actually drop down and recognize the anxiety, allow it to be there and feel it in the body, guess what thoughts stopped happening? I stopped needing to figure out the conversation because I was able to meet the anxiety at the source. And that's the only place we can actually really meet the emotion, right? That we can actually address it. It's kind of like cutting it off at the past. We don't need to figure out the solution with our mental movies. We can meet it right here, right now, in the body. So it seems so simple. It's like, well, what's the point of noticing that this grief has kind of a sharp tightness at the top of the chest? But the benefit is we're really meeting it. It's like if a child came to our door that was really despairing, would we ignore that child? No. Ideally, we'd really fully meet that child. We'd really take good care of them. And we all have a child that lives in our heart. That's asking for care. That's asking for attention. That's asking for us to listen and be present with it. And so part of this practice of being mindful of emotions in the body is we're giving the emotions the attention they're asking for. You know, we're often suffering in some significant way. And this practice, it's all about attention. You know, can we give the heart the attention that it's asking for? And often when we do, it ceases to throw such big fits. There's not as many tantrums when we can really be present for the heart in this way. So kind of got ahead of myself, because that could be, we could say that's the description for tender, T or tenderness, is we're learning how to meet this, the parts of us that suffer, the parts of us that are having a hard time, with compassion. So we feel it in the body, and then if it's hard, we can meet that with maybe a hand on the heart. For some people, that's like a very unusual gesture. And it's a way that we can show just some tenderness to ourselves. So if we're meditating and we notice there's, you know, some difficulty, you might just try putting a hand on the heart or a hand on the belly. Some people like to speak to themselves, you know, offer a phrase of kindness or tenderness. Like I might say, like, oh, this is hard, sweetheart. It's okay. It's okay. This is hard. Just being really sweet to the one within that's having a hard time. And this is a profoundly different way of being with our emotional life than going, oh, how can I get rid of this sadness? Or this is, I can't stand this. Like, I need to go eat a pint of ice cream or have a drink or something to not be with this. But it can really transform things if we can learn to tend to the heart, to take good care of our difficult emotions. It soothes them. It's almost like a reparenting of the heart. So this is the feel and tease, or feel and tenderness. So this tenderness is particularly helpful when emotions are difficult. But you also have another option. If an emotion is really hard, you felt it in the body and it's just too much, like it's overwhelming to be with it, that same principle for physical pain applies. You can put your attention elsewhere. So maybe it's like, oh, being in the body with this amount of emotional agitation, like this is just too much. Like, I'm going to pay attention to the soundscape for a while. So, you know, I've gone into the pain. I'm going to go out of the pain for a while. I'm still going to stay present, but I'm going to resource in the soundscape. This is a much wider container than this little vessel, right? The physical vessel. So you have options. If it feels like too much, compassion is a balm, and then also giving yourself a break is a balm. Want to do another meditation? Want to try it? Great. And maybe I'll invite you, before we do this one, why don't you just stand up for a moment? Just stretch your legs for a second, bring a little more energy in the body, maybe bounce the knees a little, shake the arms. Maybe a little stretch. And then sitting back down. Okay, so for this meditation, I'm going to do something a little dangerous, which is that I'm going to invite you to bring to mind a situation in your life that might be a little agitating. So something that's a little difficult for you. And maybe I should say, when you think of this difficulty, don't choose the most difficult thing. So don't choose the 10 out of 10. You want to choose like a 3 out of 10 for for this exercise, okay? Something that's just, you know, a little bit agitating. You know, maybe it's an annoying habit that your coworker or your neighbor has. Or maybe, you know, it's some chore or activity that's coming up that you're kind of not looking forward to so much, like, you know, that dentist appointment or something like that. So just a, you know, 2, 3, 4 out of 10, not a 10 out of 10. Doesn't have to be the perfect situation, but just, you know, bring something to mind that just, you know, does not your favorite thing. Could be something that's coming up. It could be something that already happened, a conversation that you just felt just a little yucky about. So reflecting on what that might be for you. And once you have this in mind, if you haven't already connected with your meditation posture, making sure that you're in a position that is upright, alert, and also relaxed. And remembering that it can help to start a meditation by deliberately relaxing. So you might soften the temples, release the jaw, relax the shoulders, soften the belly, open the hips, and allow any tension to flow out through the legs and the feet. And as always, it helps to begin by touching in with the breath. And when we're doing our breathing practice, we're feeling it in the body. We're sensing it. We know that we're breathing because we can feel the breathing. We can feel the expansion of the diaphragm or the lifting of the chest. Or we feel the air on the nostrils. We know what's happening in the present because we can feel it. Now we'll let go of our focus on the breath and we'll bring this situation to mind, the one that's a little agitating. And you're invited to actually think about it for a few moments to bring it to life so that you can feel it. So just in the way that you're reflecting on this now to bring it to life, for the rest of the meditation, if you lose contact with the emotion or the story, you can refresh it. Just bringing it back to mind, remembering the image or the storyline. So as you do this now, So you reflect on this situation, this memory, or this upcoming event, whatever it is. What are you feeling in your heart? What's the emotion or mood that's present in relationship to it? So this is the R, the recognize. Maybe it's an emotion, maybe it's an attitude or state of mind. Maybe you're not exactly sure what the emotion is, but you just notice aversion or you're not liking. And as you recognize this, can you allow it to be here? And this is the A. Just allowing it to be here. Can you? You don't have to like it. But can you allow it? Thinking of it as we're coexisting with this experience. Not pushing it away, not trying to hold on to it either. Not trying to keep it, not trying to get rid of it. And can you feel it in the body? F, feel. And at any point, if you need to refresh the emotion, remembering the situation, the memory, you're welcome to do that. As you do, where do you feel the emotion in the body? Is there tightness anywhere? Or contraction? If so, where's the tightest point? Or the tightest area, most contracted area? As you feel it, does it have edges? Or is it kind of diffuse? Where do you feel it in the body? Is it in the jaw or the chest? Maybe the belly? And is it unpleasant or pleasant? If it's unpleasant, can you allow that? Just letting that be there. No need to fix it or change it. And as you do this, you may notice that it changes. The sensations change, the emotion changes. And then T for tenderness. So if there's any difficulty here with this emotion, this mind state, can you bring a little kindness to it? You might try putting a hand on the heart. If that feels right for you. Remembering, just as all beings want to be happy, I too want to be happy. And this is difficult. That's okay. Some people like to offer a wish of well-being. May you be free of suffering. May you be held in compassion. Sending this wish to oneself or to the heart or the emotion. It's okay, love. This is hard. Leaving the hand on the heart or returning the hand to your lap, whatever feels right for you. And taking the next few minutes to practice with whichever letter feels most useful for you. Maybe it's recognizing a new emotion coming through, maybe allowing what's present, maybe continuing to feel it in the body, maybe bringing more tenderness, or maybe if there's no predominant emotion, just returning to the breath. We'll practice in silence for a few minutes. If an emotion becomes too strong or overwhelming, remember you can rest in the soundscape if it's too much. This simple act of recognizing, allowing, and feeling in the body
can provide a totally different way, a totally new way of meeting our emotional life. And for many of us, the tenderness, the self-compassion, can be challenging. This isn't something that's accessible right away for a lot of people. So if that feels foreign to you, if that doesn't feel accessible, don't be hard on yourself. There's no need to shoot a second arrow about that. It's a cultivated quality. So there are additional practices one can do for growing compassion. So for now, sometimes it can be enough just to wish for compassion. You know, may this be held in compassion. You know, may I be free of suffering. So it's okay if there's not the emotion of compassion that arises. It still plants a wholesome seed to have that wish. So what did you notice? We have some time for questions now. Maybe I should mention that I can't stay after today for questions. I have somewhere I need to go. So this is your chance for today, if you have any.
I don't know if it's allowed to bring in other like philosophies and just ask you about it within the context of what you've taught. Okay. So regarding at least some of ours, mind's tendency to replay whatever the second arrow for far more than 6 or 9 seconds, it makes me think about Eckhart Tolle and his description of the pain body and how our ego feeds on the pain body and it wants pain or needs pain. And I don't know if the teachings here speak in alignment with that or have a different version or.
Yeah. You know, I read, The Power of Now, his book, I don't know, maybe 20 years ago or so. So it's been a while. So I hesitate to offer any, compare and contrast just because I don't remember his particular framework as well. But what I do remember is that there is a considerable amount of overlap, a lot of what he teaches overlaps with what we're doing here. But it's not synonymous. He's not strictly teaching Buddhism. So,
okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Hi, this is Lynn. I just wanted to ask you, if someone grew up and did not get their emotional needs met, and then they picked someone as a partner who also wasn't able to give that to the person, could the person that never got that actually give that to themselves?
Yes.
In a way that's fulfilling?
Absolutely. And that's a lot of what we're learning to do here. That it's actually possible to give the heart what it's seeking externally. So if we're lonely, can we give the heart the attention that it's looking for externally? If you know, maybe as a child we weren't well attended to, or you know, we were sad and never comforted. Can we comfort our own sadness? So we're learning how to do that. Very much so. You don't have to have received it externally to learn how to cultivate it for oneself. Yeah. Anything else?
Yeah. Daniel, it's not a question, but just you mentioned self-compassion, and that seems huge. And I wanted to mention there's a workbook called The Mindful Self-Compassion Workbook by Kristen Neff. If anyone in here would like to follow up on that stuff, it's really good.
Yeah, awesome. I'm so glad you put in a plug for Kristen Neff. She's done a lot of study and work around self-compassion, and she offers a practice called Mindful Self-Compassion. I believe she's affiliated with Stanford. Is that, are you? Yeah, I think she did. She's done a lot of studies around self-compassion. I'm pretty sure it's through Stanford. And yeah, it's a great practice that is quite aligned with what we're doing here. So some of the steps are just recognizing that suffering is present, offering some gesture of kindness or compassion towards oneself. Sometimes that could be a gesture or a phrase, maybe a hand on the heart, or may you be free of suffering. And she includes a step of remembering that all beings experience suffering. And it's like, I'm experiencing this feeling of depression, and so many other beings are experiencing this at the same time. Often in our when we are stuck in a difficult emotion, there can be this feeling like I'm the only one that feels this way. And rather, this is the same experience that's traveling through so many hearts right now. So thank you for bringing that in. It's been a while since I've read her stuff, so there might be other steps that I'm missing. That, yeah.
Her workbook's super good. You walk away through everything.
Great.
She teaches.
Nice. Excellent, excellent. Thank you. We have a couple of minutes left, and I'll share a little bit about the homework with you if you'd like to do it. The suggestion is you continue to do a daily practice. Maybe you increase it a little bit. Maybe you do, say, 15 to 20 minutes a day, if that feels like it's an achievable goal for you. If what's actually achievable is 2 minutes, please stick with 2 minutes, because it's not helpful to have a goal that isn't achievable. So do what works for you, but you might try a little longer. The way that I'd suggest meditating is a little bit more like what we did for the first meditation. Breath is the home base. As something else becomes predominant, let the attention go and check it out, whether that's a physical sensation, whether that's a sound, whether that's an emotion. And it may be, one could spend a really long time doing raft. So let's say you notice you're sitting, you're doing that practice, and a strong emotion comes up, you might switch to doing raft. So you recognize it, allow it to be there, and then feel it in the body as long as you want to feel it in the body. Maybe bring some tenderness to it, some compassion to it. And then if it's no longer predominant, maybe you just come back to the breath. Some emotions aren't super strong. And you might just recognize them. They're just like a little quick ripple. And they're gone before you could even do all of raft. So it's not like you need to do raft every time an emotion comes to visit. So I find that raft is most helpful for difficult emotions and persistent ones. At the very least, sometimes it can be helpful just to do the recognition piece. Like, I'm just going to recognize it as it comes on the radar for a second. And feeling it in the body. Sometimes the shorthand for raft, I just do recognize and feel. Recognize and feel if there's not a lot of time. Different ways to practice with it. You don't need to do all four letters every time. As you're learning it, though, I do recommend you practice with the four letters so you really learn them. But then after that, you can kind of play jazz with it. Maybe you just do one or the other, another one. I know people who spent a whole year really just doing the A, like really focusing on allowing, and it transformed their practice. Just really allowing whatever emotion is there. So you can play with it. I would suggest, this is the second part of the homework, that at some point this week, when in present time, when you notice a strong emotion rolling through, to stop and do the raft practice. It may be during your dedicated meditation period each day that there aren't any strong emotions that roll through. So that's why I'm suggesting that it may be while you're washing your dishes or after a conversation at work, you take a few moments to yourself to do the raft practice. Maybe you spend 5 minutes doing it, maybe less, maybe much more, depending on how much time you have. But that can be helpful when it's really something's really alive for you to do, to see what it's like, how this practice helps you or works for you when you have something strong coming through. And the last thing is, and this can seem like kind of a wild card, it's to notice feelings of happiness and contentment. Often people come to meditation practice because there's some sort of challenge in their life or some sort of difficulty. This is not always the case, but it's often the case. And so it can seem like the practice is all about working with difficulty. But that's actually only half the practice. The other half is learning how to practice with beautiful emotions and beautiful states and qualities of heart and mind that are really wonderful. Happiness, joy, kindness, compassion. There's all of these sympathetic joy, joy and the joy of others. There's all of these beautiful states that can come forth through doing this. And one of the first steps in cultivating them is just noticing when they're present. There's so many moments of contentment or calm or joy or ease or peace each day that we don't even notice. We're not mindful of them. So just see if a little bit this week, if you can start noticing moments of goodness, moments when you have one of these wholesome states present. And it can be a teeny tiny expression of it. It doesn't have to be big. One of my teachers says, joy can be as small as the bird tweeting outside the window. It's like these little tiny expressions of ease or peace or happiness. So see if you can notice those too. And so next class will be mindfulness of thinking. And that day, so every Sunday at IMC, there's a Dharma talk, a morning talk, and it's usually a larger group. There's a meditation. I think it's maybe about a 30, 35-minute meditation followed by a talk. And so I'll be giving the talk that morning and then staying here for this afternoon class. So both will be on mindfulness of thinking. So I'll do kind of a slightly different angle on mindfulness of thinking in the morning, and then I'll do kind of the foundations, the basics of mindfulness of thinking in the afternoon. So you're welcome to come to both, and at the least, I will see you next week in the afternoon. So looking forward to it. Thank you for being here, everyone. Take care.